Every Christmas, Linkbait pops up all over the internet, hating on poor Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for portraying Santa Claus and Roo's family as a bunch of hateful bigots. Conservatives gobble it up as evidence of the war on Christmas. With all the clatter arising on social media, it's easy to forget that Rudolph, the second most beloved Christmas character of all time, is a beautiful story celebrating misfits.
Today, we take a look at the most famous reindeer of all, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, a story written by a poor Jewish copywriter that became a Christmas song classic and a Rankin-Bass animated TV special that's now linkbait for lazy bloggers.
Plus, a new study says Grindr is the number one app most likely to leave you depressed.
The Chinese are feeding their garbage to hordes of cockroaches.
And a bank ATM in London knows if you've been naughty or nice. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Merry Christmas, everyone!
Merry Christmas, Santa.
Ooh.
Do you have something in your sack for me?
I do.
What is it?
A wonderful, amazing story.
Ooh.
Well, you know about Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, and the Vixen.
Oh, what?
I'm not talking about drag queens.
Okay.
I'm talking about reindeers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with reindeers. Donner and Blitzen is Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. Comet and Cupid. Those are Greek gods for love. And a comet is fast.
Mm-hmm. Speedy Gonzalez.
But the most famous reindeer of all is, over the years, grown to be one of the most hated characters on the internet, but one of the most beloved characters associated with the pagan, now Christian, holiday of Christmas.
Why are people hating Rudolph?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the Rankin-Bass animated classic in 1964 that portrayed Santa Claus and a lot of the people in the village of the North Pole as a bunch of assholes.
Well, you know, Santa is, you know, he's watching you. He's Big Brother. He knows if you've been naughty or nice. As a kid, you're kind of, you're enthralled by Santa Claus because the idea of him bringing you gifts is something special. But you also know you have to behave. And who wants to behave? It's so much better to be naughty.
You have, in order to be nice, you have to be naughty sometimes.
Yeah. Well, when I'm good, I'm good. But when I'm bad, I'm even better, right?
Well, elves come from a very old tradition that they were sort of like trickster supernatural creatures that inhabited your home and sort of like gremlins caused things to not go right. And so they would keep track of who was good and who wasn't not so good, and then, you know, played more tricks on the people who are not so nice.
And you had to appease them by leaving stuff out, like some food for them to eat in your shoes, because, you know, they're little elves, so they're not going to be able to climb up very high.
And so I think, you know, the idea of leaving presents underneath the Christmas tree or in your stockings, or, and, you know, Puerto Rico, we would leave hay in our shoes for the camels to eat, and then they would be filled with presents. The whole idea of, like, leaving presents sitting around the house is sort of a tradition that dates back to even before Christianity. It has to do with paganism and those elves.
Well, even Santa Claus himself, I mean, you know, we Christianize Santa because now he's, you know, Saint Nicholas, right?
Correct.
But, you know, in Norway, the Norwegians just call him, he's the Christmas elf.
Oh,
he's just kind of like
that.
He's an elf, but he's like just, he's like Yule Neeson, like Neeson is the is elf. And so they just call him that.
And a lot of things that we love about the holiday season actually arose as advertising campaigns. And, you know, certainly Santa Claus, the way we think about Santa Claus, the way Santa Claus looks to modern eyes, was an ad campaign for Coca-Cola. And
yeah, so if you look at different cultures, he looks very much different. There's a restaurant in our neighborhood called Reza's, and, you know, a lot of the people that work there are Middle Eastern. It's a Middle Eastern restaurant. A lot of them are Assyrian, which is Iraqis who are Christian, right? And so they have their Assyrian Santa in there, and he kind of looks like, you know, he's different. He's not that bright, jolly old Saint Nick that we know with the big kind of cheeks. I mean, he's still a little plump, but he looks, you know, rather medieval looking, almost Russian.
Yeah, he's not Assyrian. You're not kidding. Or wait, how does that? How would that go? You're Assyrian. You're not kidding. He's Assyrian, or something like
that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, we all think is this kind of animated classic, this ubiquitous character that's been with us through all time. But he actually became invented by Montgomery Ward, the department stores based out of here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You want to go back in time with me?
I do want to go back in time with you. What was it like in Christmas in the 30s in Montgomery Ward?
Jingle, jingle, jingle. I'm the king of ting-a-ling. I am old Kris Kringle. I'm the king of ting-a-ling.
It's jingling. You're trying to gay him up.
Just a tiny little bit. But isn't ting-a-ling and jingling kind of euphemisms for gay?
Well, ting-a-ling definitely is.
Yeah, from Three's Company, they would describe Jack Tripper as gay. So in 1939, Montgomery Ward, the chain of department stores, every year would give out books for free to kids. Aww. Now, these weren't like, you know, expensive books. These were mostly like coloring books.
Yeah, coloring books.
And this year they said, you know, we're just going to make our own because this is getting really expensive. And they turned to Robert L. May, a humble young Jewish family man whose family lost all their money in the Great Depression and moved to Chicago to take a low-paid job as an in-house advertising copywriter. Nobody at Montgomery Ward wanted to work on this project because they didn't think it was sophisticated or it was not something that a distinguished copywriter wanted to work on, right? Mm-hmm. May, at that time, May's wife, Evelyn, had contracted cancer and was quite ill, and as he started writing the book, Montgomery Ward required Robert L. May to develop a Christmas story for kids that was based on animals. So he turned to his daughter and asked her, "What kind of animals do you like?" Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Deers! I love deers!"
Aww.
Because she was in love with this deer that was at the Chicago Zoo.
Well, and Bambi would have been super popular at that time, too, right?
So the book, Bambi, that was written, I guess it was a German classic Felix Satin's novel, Bambi, A Life in the Woods. That's very similar to Jack London's Call of the Wild. It's a novel based on the perspective of an animal living in the woods. That was published in 1928 and brought to the United States in 1929 and translated into English. So I would imagine that, you know, for a lot of people, that story was on their minds as a very popular children's book, mm-hmm. or a book that even was required reading in high school or elementary school.
Well, and when you think about Christmases, like, what are the animals that come to mind? You like, you know, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. So there's some stuff written about Christmas. But then it's also like, what else is there besides the reindeer? Because the reindeer has always been associated with Santa's sleigh.
Mm-hmm. Because they eat hallucinogenic mushrooms.
Yeah,
reindeer do.
Yeah, well, the reindeer do, and also up in that area, you know, like northern Sweden and northern Norway, the Sami people, that's their lifeblood is the reindeer. You know, they live off of its milk, off of its hide. They wear its fur, and there's also these little magic mushrooms, and you see them. If you look closely at a lot of Christmas stuff, you'll see a mushroom or a toadstool with like a white, you know, base. And then the top, the hood part is red with little white dots. And those are hallucinogenic mushrooms.
You can take those and get high.
You can take those and it makes you, they say it gives you the feeling of flying.
Oh, so, yeah. So the idea of reindeer flying through the skies is not something that Robert L. May came up with. That was already in existence.
Oh, yeah, that was already in existence.
But he was like, you know, one thing that's really fascinates a lot of people is this phenomena of reindeer's noses. Mm-hmm. Unlike dogs, whose noses have to be ice cold when they're healthy, reindeers have very sensitive stomachs and have to be very careful what they eat. So their noses, the colder it gets, the redder their noses get.
Wow.
So reindeers naturally have red noses. All of them do. But it was something else. I'm sure National Geographic magazine was taking pictures of reindeers or something. And the idea popped into his head about misfits. As a young Jewish boy living in the Depression era, moving to Chicago, I'm sure that Robert L. May experienced a lot of hardship and adversity and also understood what it was like to be a misfit.
Since he was a minority person, that he's got that kind of perspective. He's just like, this is the story that I want to tell.
So at that time, his wife is dying of cancer. He's, you know, the low on the totem pole, asked to write this story, and drawing on his painfully shy childhood memories, wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It was not expected to be that big of a deal, and it was a commercial hit. 2.4 million copies were distributed in 1938. Can you imagine that, just the power of that, that this story about Christmas, and it's all about commercialism and buy stuff and Christianity and stuff, and here's a story that speaks to everybody of the misfits, the not fitting in, the being the square peg in a round-holed world.
Well, who doesn't like free stuff? Because it was a free comic book, basically.
Well, they were always doing it every year. Every year they did it, so this was a, there was an anomaly. Shoppers loved it so much that they couldn't reprint it the following year, and they never had a reissue until 1946. That year, 3.6 million copies were distributed to Montgomery Ward shoppers.
Why couldn't they do it the next year? Because they thought it would be too much of a
hit. Because of the war.
Oh.
They were like, no paper, honey. We need everything we got. In the meantime, Robert L. May's wife dies of cancer. She is, I mean, there's just so much heartache in the story. His boss offered to take him off the book assignment in the process of writing this. Robert refused and completed the poem. He, his family was almost bankrupt. Almost like they were just at their ends. And Sewell Avery, the company's president, gave copyrights to the poem to May, free and clear, saying, do what you can with this as a gift. It's hard to imagine that kind of generosity by a corporation today.
I know. You look at the guy who invented the mouse for Xerox, and it's just like he's never really made a dime from it. And, like, you know, Xerox has just made probably $1 billion off of it at this point in time.
If I say the name Farnsworth, you think of a character on Futurama, but Ilo T. Farnsworth was the man who invented the television. Good news, everyone! I'm not remembered as the inventor of television. And certainly we've been extremely instrumental in what podcasting is and how to shape its form. But you ask anybody, what were the first podcasts like?
Serial.
They don't really remember, you know, and that's usually the truth of the matter, is that the people who invent a lot of things in history are usually unsung heroes, you know. So nearing bankruptcy, he was given the rights to the story. And Robert L. May say, well, maybe I can approach a publisher and get this republished as a children's book. And he hit everybody he could. And all of them said, you know, Montgomery Ward collectively has given almost 6 million copies away for free. We don't want it. So 1947, Harry Elbaum, the head of Maxim Publishers, took a chance on it and his job to put up an updated print edition of the famous poem. And it was a bestseller.
Amazing.
It was the set. So then they were like, maybe there's something, there's gold in the hills. So Robert L. May's brother-in-law, Johnny Marks, who was a songwriter, turned it into a song and shopped it around. They asked Bing Crosby and Dinah Shore to record it. They said no. And a cowboy vocalist, a singing cowboy, Gene Autry, took on the song, and it became the second best-selling Christmas song of all time.
Oh, my God.
The number one is Bing Crosby's White Christmas.
Oh, wow. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny... That's the song?
Yeah. Wow. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's covered so many versions. There's a samba, there's a mambo version that's actually really great. We played it in Incredibly Strange Christmas Music. And, you know, this song and this message of that you are different because of these unique aspects about you, and they're not actually liabilities. They're not even what makes you special. They might come in one day, save the tribe, save the day. That message speaks to every person, and I think that's what Christmas really is about, is coming together as a community and embracing and celebrating people's differences.
Well, it's also what makes you different makes you a threat, right? Because people were very threatened by Rudolph and his funny little nose, because he was much different than everybody, and he's just like, you have to be, it's a story of like, you have to be normal, you have to be normal, you have to fit in. But, you know, there's some ways you can't be normal and you will never fit in.
So Gene Autry became famous for being sort of this kiddie holiday cowboy singer. Mm-hmm. He came up with a bunch of other songs, including Frosty the Snowman. Then, in 1950, with Jack Rollins and Steve Nelson, came out with Peter Cottontail. Mm-hmm. Here comes Peter Cottontail.
That was also a Rankin Bass production.
Yes, eventually. Mm-hmm. So it's 1964, fast forward, and the Civil Rights Act is passed, ending segregation and banning employment discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. And the country is feeling a profound change and understanding of what it means to be different. Mm. On the top of everyone's minds, on the tip of their tongues, is the racism, misfits, outcasts. And then a group of animators who first got their start as advertising executives and copywriters for ABC television created an animated TV special, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It was animated in Japan, and the Rankin and Bass weren't familiar with the book. They were just basing it on the song. So they came up with the idea of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer getting kicked out of his tribe, and along with Hermie, the dentist elf, mm-hmm. who wanted to be a dentist, not an elf, and finding themselves on the island of lost toys, where all mm-hmm. toys that weren't perfect, that weren't built to specifications, mm-hmm. found their way until somebody wanted them. And along the way, they run into a miner called Yukon Cornelius, who is in search of riches of the peppermint mine.
Silver and gold.
Silver and gold. The villain of the animated classic is not Santa Claus, who's an asshole throughout the beginning and middle and end. It's the abominable snow monster who wants to eat, Rudolph and his girlfriend Clarice and Hermes and everybody. And the whole animated special is hosted by Burl Ives as the voice of Sam the Living Snowman, which then later was reinvented into be
Frosty.
Frosty the Snowman. But that's why they didn't host it by Frosty, because Frosty didn't exist at the time.
Aww.
Now, what's interesting to me is that when he's being taunted and bullied by the other reindeer, Fireball, a reindeer whose red hair mm-hmm. shows up and is like, hey, you're so weird with a red nose. Because at that time period, redheads were also taunted mm-hmm. as well.
Oh, yeah. Beaten like a red-headed stepchild is what people used to say.
For me, like as a kid, watching that special is almost synonymous with Christmas and mm-hmm. Christmas memories.
Well, the thing about it is, too, is like we just didn't have the choices that we have now for our viewing. So like when something like The Wizard of Oz or Frosty the Snowman or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer came on TV, you had one of four channels to watch or three channels to watch. And so it was a big deal because you only got to see it once a year. You didn't have a VHS. You didn't have, a CD-ROM player. You couldn't watch anything, or a DVD player. It was, if you didn't catch it, if you didn't watch it then, you missed it for a complete year.
So many great moments that TV special. There's, Mrs. Claus, who Santa's like really annoyed. He's stressed out, not because there's bad weather or anything. This happens, they're saying in the special, every year Santa's an asshole because he is stressed out because he's always late getting mm-hmm. all the toys ready for Christmas mm-hmm. Eve. And Mrs. Claus is screaming to him, going, eat, Papa, eat. And Santa Claus reacts with, how can I eat with that silly elf song? It's driving me crazy. Then Mrs. Claus, you haven't touched your dinner. Nobody likes a skinny Santa.
You love it now, but when I say that to you, you're always like, shut up.
So, as a consequence, it's the longest running TV mm-hmm. special in terms of consecutive years. Since it aired in 1964, it's still airing on television every holiday season since then.
Wow. I like what on Twitter, what Colby said about it. Watching the traditional American cinematic allegory about a set of dysmorphic genderqueer heroes fighting against convention to carve their place within a heterocentric, patriarchal, totalitarian state. Gripping. Because, that's the thing about it is, Hermie, is the little elf who wants to be a dentist. He wants to be, he's into oral care.
Hermes is actually the Greek god of hermaphrodite. Mm-hmm. Who is a transgender god with both male and female genitalia.
It's where the word hermaphrodite comes from, which you use to apply to animals, I guess, is what the... For humans, we say intersexed.
But so Hermes the name is based on an intersex god.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, there's Hermes had sex with Aphrodite.
Oh, yes, Aphrodite. So never mind.
And so they did that. But he's Hermie, not Hermes,
Oh.
And do you remember Lady Gaga when she joked about her Hermie dick.
I don't think the animes were intentionally trying to make them gender nonconforming, but they certainly come across like that today.
Are all elves kind of queer?
A little bit. They go out of their way to in the animated special to show that there's female elves who wear pink, not green.
Ah.
And they're dancing together. And Hermie, who we think is gay, we never question his heterosexuality. At the end, he's dancing with another girl elf, and it feels weird,
It does feel weird. Well, the thing is, though, too, it's like, they both, Rudolph and Hermie, both run away. They run away, and when you look at, the homeless population of youth in America, it's like... an astounding, it's like 60% of them are gay kids. People are just not accepted, and so they leave.
Do you think as a society, after, 1964 to this day... Every year we watch that animated special, and every year more and more hearts are melted. The cold around people's hearts melts, and we start embracing more and more diversity. So in terms of what's good about America, what's good about Western culture, that embracing of the weirdo, the misfit, the outcast, it's something that I think I'm not willing to give up. There's a lot of discussion this year on problematic or harmful Christmas classics Baby It's Cold Outside is that song. And people are like, we should stop playing that or singing that song. And I'm like, nobody was playing that until, Glee started doing it. It's a jazz classic, but there's a lot of classic songs that nobody remembers. And, certainly when I'm digging up songs for Incredibly Strange Christmas Music, I find all sorts of weirdo songs that everybody's forgot. The song Backdoor Santa is hilarious, but it is kind of creepy. Is this idea of this man breaking into this woman's house where her husband's away and having sex with her. In the butt. Yeah.
Right? Is that what the back door is?
Backdoor Santa. And he has a candy cane in his pocket and coins to give to the kids in case, the husband comes home early.
Well, one of the big complaints about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, too, is that, they don't accept him. They only accept him because they can exploit his differences. They can use his nose. But if you watch the show carefully, you'll see that Santa accepts Rudolph for who he is. And then later says, oh, my God, you can guide my sleigh tonight. Because of your thing.
Is that the animated special or the song?
The animated special.
Yeah.
And so the animated special is Rudolph finds his home. He's accepted into his community. And then he gets exploited. So it's not we can use you. Now we accept you. So it's the acceptance comes first. And then they exploit him. Happy to do it.
Don't be born a freak. And if you are, make yourself useful. And maybe it'll stop the beatings or at least the severity.
But, and that's part of the reason why you're a freak. And that's why you are different is that thing that's unique to you more often than not is an asset. It is something you can use to your advantage.
It's what's going to save the day in the long run. Not today, but tomorrow. At the end, you're... That quality that makes you different from other people that people sometimes reject or turned off by it. But, that might save the day. But at the same time, we want to make a distinction between that and just being rude and cruel and hurtful to other people.
Sure.
Because, there's a lot of people's bad behavior has been excuses like if they don't love me at my best, my worst, they can't tank me at my best. Yeah. And I'm like, that's just an excuse to be an asshole.
Like saying you're a Scorpio, right?
Yeah. Poor Roo. I'm talking about Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer.
Is he a triple Scorpio?
He says he's a triple Scorpio, yeah. The drag queen, RuPaul. Yeah.
Is he triple or double? I forget.
Something like that. It's basically saying, like, you know, if I hurt you in the end, forgive me because that was my nature. Mm-hmm. You should have trusted me.
My moon's in Scorpio.
The parable of the Scorpio and the frog. Mm. What is the story? Is the frog is trying to cross? The Scorpio wants to cross the river.
And so he gets on the back of a fox. And the fox says, no, you're going to sting me. And he's just like, no, I won't. I just want to get across the river. And so as they're going
because he says, if I sting you, we will both die.
Yeah, we will both die.
And the fox says, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then they're swimming across, and then he gets stung, and he's just like, sorry, it's in my nature.
As they're drowning to death, the fox turns to the Scorpio and says, why did you sting me? Now we will both die. And he says, I couldn't help myself. It was in my nature. Mm-hmm.
And who's, you know, I bet a scorpion can swim a little bit.
Not that far. It's a bug. It's not one of those skipping bugs. What are your thoughts about the Rankin Bass animated classic?
Well, you know, it's something that's very near and dear to my heart. It was, as kids, we got so excited to watch it, and we sang along. We knew the songs. It was so exciting. And I think as a little queer boy, I just really kind of identified, because you really felt like a outsider in many ways. And so feeling that warm embrace of Santa and the family was important.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, like, animated specials. Besides, you know, the Charlie Brown Christmas special, that look of that animated classic, there was ad campaigns for, like, tissues, you know, like,
and
Kleenex.
Shavers and stuff, and shavers, like that. Yeah. I think they actually used that snowman to advertise an electric shaver.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
And then he's, you know, a very attractive actor underneath. Mm. It's a really important story. I'm not willing to give it up. You know, it's, I think, when it comes to, like, examining these traditions and, you know, having a discussion about them, it's, if we don't want to play that song, if we don't want to play, watch that TV special, just don't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many amazing Christmas songs and TV specials of all kinds of perspectives to you know, create link bait saying it's like, this is messed up, or I think it's kind of funny. And certainly as long as the internet's been around, there's been articles. I found an article like 2007 about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer being problematic. almost a decade.
You know, it's kind of funny because people always say, like, problematic when they don't really know how to describe what the situation is.
You like to use another word.
What do I like to
use? Harmful.
Well, harmful instead of offensive. When people are saying, I don't know why people are so offended. Like, they're offended by these words. I'm like, well, don't, you know, by saying that, like, offensive, it's like, who cares about, like, if somebody's offended? Nobody. Is it harmful to someone? Is it harmful to say, if my kid was born gay, I would beat them over the head with a dollhouse in a tweet? And I would say, it's not offensive. It's harmful language. It's inciting violence against young children.
And sometimes I think, you know, like, in terms of the every year around this time period, there's a lot of controversy on who the Academy Awards chooses for to host the Oscars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as the internet sort of matures and ages, we're going to have a lot of records of a lot of entertainers saying things that are harmful and divisive and cruel in the past. And so most recently, and this is 2018, Kevin Hart, who's an actor, a comedian, was invited to host the Oscars. And he furiously deleted a bunch of homophobic tweets and jokes that he posted. One most famously saying if his son came out as gay to him, he would pick up the dollhouse and smash it over his head. And the issue that a lot of people are not talking about was the reason why Kevin Hart stepped down as host of the Oscars. The Academy Awards asked him, would you please not do this kind of humor in your presentation? He said, I couldn't guarantee that. That's why he quit. It's not based on his past tweets. It was based on him not willing to do things in the future.
Because they were aware of his past tweets. He did some kind of half-assed apology for it, but he just couldn't guarantee that he wouldn't do this in the future. So it's not the right fit for him. Because you are in front of a public audience. Most of the people in your audience in that theater are queer or gay, or at least know lots of people who are gay. So, you know, it's harmful language.
And at the same time, in defense of Kevin Hart, mm-hmm. there is a lot of outrage and anger and discussion when it comes to African-American male entertainers failing to live up mm-hmm. to equality and to kindness, that we don't normally have this level of outrage when other people of other backgrounds have that. Mm-hmm. And, and so, you know, I can understand, like, I
You're
feel
talking
like
white people,
well, just everybody in general mm-hmm. on the internet, black and white, you mm-hmm. know, so all races and backgrounds are chiming in on Kevin Hart as a host. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, this happens every year. The reason that we're treating this so big is we have this expectation that somebody being a minority is going to be, you know, the magic Negro, this wise, magical creature, as Spike Lee talks mm-hmm. about, this director, that's going to come in and teach us the real meaning of life and get our groove together. Back and get us together. Yeah. And I think that's a racist archetype. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, human beings have their flaws in every background that they have in. And when we fail to live up to our kindness and humanity, it's not something... We're failing just like anybody else is failing. And we need to create spaces for people to grow and blossom and improve. Mm-hmm. And I think right now, the way a lot of these social media networks are set up, they're set up for mm-hmm. to make it easy for people to battle with each other in the terms of opinion. Mm-hmm. So when we disagree with somebody, it never results in us in greater understanding and
they're just canceled.
Compromise. They're canceled. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a detriment. You know, if he had offered some kind of apology at the time and said, listen, I can understand why this is very hurtful language. You know, I will try to do better. I think comedy is one of those things that you got to, you know, you punch up, that kind of thing. And it just told the Academy, like, listen, I might make a mistake, but you know what? I'm going to try my damnedest. You know,
and I think that's what I would like to see a lot of entertainers who are weighing in on this. Mm-hmm. I want to see them try to understand things from Kevin Hart's perspective. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know, there are a lot of African-American entertainers who are comedians, who are great hosts, who would be better choices. Hello, Monique. She actually has an Oscar. Mm-hmm. She's available.
But she's difficult to work with, they say.
I think that's Lee Daniels, yeah. Oprah Winfrey, and Tyler Perry have a beef with her mm-hmm. because she wouldn't travel overseas because her money is not as abundant as theirs to promote Precious mm-hmm. in the foreign market. And she said is like, can you cover my costs? And they were like, why? How dare you? And they blacklisted her.
Is that how it went down?
That's what I'm seeing.
Okay.
You know, and certainly like Whoopi Goldberg, there's this video like Whoopi Goldberg reads Monique to filth for, and Whoopi Goldberg's agreeing with her. Mm. And a lot of African-American entertainers are like, yeah, that Monique is held to a double standard that other entertainers are not.
And she probably didn't get a lot of money to do that movie because I think that movie was pretty low budget, right?
Yeah, it's like Robert L. May, you know, it's like he would have died penniless if it wasn't for the generosity of the head of Montgomery Ward. Mm. And part of it is like, you know, a lot of these actors, they get involved in projects and these projects blossom and grow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a natural reaction. This is one thing we've observed and experienced ourselves, like with Cooking with Drag Queens. Some of the drag queens we've featured on the series then go on to be on Drag Race or their careers go really well. And then they start going telling other drag queens not to go on the show, even though the show is... In essence, a reel for them. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's really, really unfair.
Well, they benefited from it and they don't want anybody else to have a benefit from it because a lot of the queens that get on Drag Race, they understand that they might have a very short shelf life. So as long as they can keep it's like whack-a-mole. As long as you can keep smacking those other drag queens down, you might still be on top.
And my feeling about that is mm-hmm. That may be the case, but the best thing you can do as an entertainer when your audience starts to grow mm-hmm. is to worry about your audience, your mm-hmm. relationship to yeah. that audience. Don't worry about that. There's another podcast, another video blogger, another drag queen, another actor who has a similar appeal mm-hmm. as you do. Mm-hmm. worry about the people who are spending money on you, who are loving you and celebrating you.
Well, and that's a lesson we learned very, very early on during this podcast, because, you know, we had some trouble with some other podcasters early on, 2005, 2006. And it was, you know, they were viciously attacking us. And I think they expected in many ways for us to do the same. And we didn't. We just said, you know what? Those are those people. I can't worry about what they're going to do. I can't be involved in that. The only thing that I can do is focus on what I'm doing and my audience. And we did. And you know what? We're still here. We're starting our 15th season next year. Next January, we come back. It's the 15th season.
It was a roller coaster ride this past year. And, you know, certainly, like, it was actually terrifying to have a photo of taking you in drag. And you look fabulous and your shoulders look great. And then the next week you look at your shoulder and there's this little cigarette burn. And you see that cigarette burn just grow and grow and grow and grow. Then you go to the dermatologist lady. And she just, her face goes pale. I'm like, you know, give me a little poker face, a little optimism.
Yeah.
You know, she's, of course, in her third trimester, slices off most of my shoulder, sends it to a biopsy, and then says, we have to take off even more. And that was, you know, I remember when I broke the news to you, how, I mean, the look of sadness and fear on your face is something I'll never forget. And to me, like, that hurt, that scared me more, and that hurt me more than anything else.
I was trembling. Listen, I love you very much, and the idea of you having to go through cancer was just, it's so frightening to me.
And you're the one who chain smoked for 30 years.
There you go.
And I'm like, here I am, like, So, you know, and it was like right around that time, then you get cast on Alt for Norge, and you go off to this amazing, beautiful adventure in Norway with really 12 other incredibly dynamic people. At the same time, our friends at Hamburger Mary's did Camp Wanakiki, where six misfit drag queens.
Was it eight?
I always thought it was six, but yeah, eight drag queens.
Just two are very forgettable. Well, most of them are.
Well, I guess I'm the illegitimate ninth drag queen for the first two. The drag bear. Initially, they had invited me to do it as a kind of a lumberjack character.
Maybe you should do the drag bear when you go to Iron Bear in January.
I want to do. So I'm performing in Austin in on January 3rd.
Yeah.
For their a drag show in Austin, Texas at the Iron Bear. And so I'm putting together a song medley of all these weird songs that we've come across this past 15 years now. You know, and just, I'm creating this really tacky Christmas outfit, and it's going to be sizzling hot, honey. It's going to melt all the icicles and make your stuffed goose piping hot.
Melt the icicles and deflate the testicles.
Oh, come on.
Well, you know who's had a really shitty year, too, is Grindr and the Washington Post.
Shit, what happened now?
The Washington Post just put an article out called Grindr was the first big dating app gay men had, and now it's falling out of favor.
Well, what happened at the beginning of the year?
There came out a study that said that, like, the Grindr is the one app that makes people the most unhappy.
And with a lot of good reason, because then later it was revealed by the New York Times that Grindr was selling people's HIV status data to third parties without their consent.
For sure. And then also, too, they came up with this whole Kinder campaign, which, you know, the post is just like, what the hell is that? You know, like, is it even doing anything to make anybody have any kind of different opinion about who they are? And then, of course, the president of Grindr, because it's now owned by a Chinese corporation, he came out and was just like, I support gay equality, but I also believe that marriage is between a holy sacrament between a man and a woman, which is like, well, that's not equality at all.
And then they've been getting into creating a magazine because they sense that people are sort of abandoning that dating and hookup app platform for other ones.
Well, the thing is with these apps is, like, people think, well, I'm going to make money from the advertising, but then they look at how invasive some of this advertising is, and, like, something like Scruff, they don't take those kinds of advertisements anymore because there's just too much of that little, all that data about you getting sent to these other people, and you don't know what's going to happen to that data. You don't know where it's going. And so also, but even with those little ads, even if you click on them, it's just such a minuscule amount. And that's, you know, because people don't want to advertise advertise on this stuff because, you know, it's purient content. Same reason why Tumblr's getting rid of the nudity and the sex and stuff like that, because they can't get an effective model for advertising. And so Griner said, well, let's try and make a publication, and maybe we'll buy out magazine, and then we'll be able to buy contracts, and people will advertise on that. But, you know, are people advertising on that? Because, like, no. You know, it's hard, you know, as a content creator for queer people, it is hard to get advertisers. And now we even see here our local alternative newspaper, The Reader, is now asking for people to support it financially, to make a donation.
They're doing a crowdfunding for a newspaper.
Yes, for a newspaper, because that's, you know, the way things are going these days. And so now into more after Grindr, which, you know, this Chinese company spent millions and millions of dollars on, is leeching money because, you know, these writers aren't cheap. And it's not cheap.
The writers, you know, make more money than you know, anything. Like, well, they're one of the best paid people on the internet that I know of.
I don't know what they make. I can't really tell. But I know that, you know, with Grindr, that they're probably just, like, pouring, like, millions of dollars a year out. And so eventually, is that advertising going to come in? I don't think it is going to come in.
Well, some of the writers have bragged that they had other jobs mm-hmm. that paid them well. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that, you know, in order to leave those jobs for this position, that mm-hmm. they would get paid more.
Perhaps, you know, or maybe it's because it's a new publication that they're, like, they're excited about it.
Sure.
It's a chance to live in Los Angeles where it's based. So we'll, you know, we'll see. And now,
I'm just disappointed in the platform. Mm-hmm. It's like the fact that there's all, you know, this community of content creators, mm-hmm. of LGBT journalists that have created made the world possible that we are today. Mm-hmm. And all the content that comes out of that company is all stuff that, people under the age of 20 or 20 somethings are doing. And it's like, I don't have any senior perspectives, except the ones when they go to an old folks home and they mm-hmm. ask senior citizens about buzzwords, you know, and it's just like, it seems really pandering and it's really superficial. And it, to me, it's really disappointing because we know people, mm-hmm. you know, that used to be guests on the mm-hmm. show. They know what we stand for. And we've had long conversations about this stuff. And to me, it was just like, it was in vain. Mm-hmm. It just fell on deaf ears.
And they, you know, and they describe themselves as a magazine made by millennials for millennials, because, you know, that's the millennials, the buzzword. No, they don't anymore. Because, you know, people, advertisers keep thinking to myself, how do we tap into this millennial market? How do you tap into this millennial market? Well, if we say we're tapping into the millennial market, we must be. But you don't really see that as much anymore. And, you know, younger people do look to older people for wisdom and guidance. You know, as much as they rebel against it, they also know that older people sometimes know what they're fucking talking about.
And what is the number one most mm-hmm. popular drag queen that is not on RuPaul's Drag Race of all fucking time? Or some of them. Coco Peru, mm-hmm. Lady Bunny, Jackie B. They're practically, you know, living fossils. And these are senior citizen mm-hmm. AARP carrying card members who are some of the most celebrated mm-hmm. LGBT entertainers.
They know their shit.
They don't even touch them.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing too is, like, when you look at something like Into More, is part of the reason I think why they have it is for Grindr. It's not only because they think maybe they'd get some advertising revenue from it, but also too, it may just kind of be more of a PR thing than anything.
Sure.
Because Grindr has been approved by its board to offer a public offering. So, you know, they're going to try and sell shares.
Stock
in Grindr, you know, on the exchange, you know, the New York Stock Exchange or whatever exchange will have them. And so I think that maybe in some ways this is just a way for them to advertise their stock.
And stock is basically, if your company's based on fraud or, you know, lies or, you know, bragging or, you know, it's kind of like it's the equivalent of hooking up with somebody who you thought their dick was 10 inches long. And when you show up with them, that dick is, you know, in centimeters, not inches. Mm. And for a lot of, you know, there's a lot of shady companies that put themselves up on the stock exchange just so the shareholders can get rich that first year and run away with the money.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I wonder how it will do. I think that there'll be some people that are like, oh my God, I use Grindr all the time. I'm going to invest all my money into it. But I think, you know, I want to talk to my friends who actually work on Wall Street and what their opinions of something like that's going to be. I'm going to guess that most of them were going to probably say just like,
they don't really care though. You know? Like when I talk about people in the financial market about these kind of shady companies, they're like, you're a fool if you invest in that. And so they're just like, great. We need more fools to, you know, lose
take
their money because then my stock, my portfolio becomes more valuable when people's other stock and portfolios fail. So in a lot of sense, our economic system in the United States and the Western world or the global economy is based on other people's failure as to self-enrich and aggrandize. And I think that's kind of shitty.
Yeah, that's Trump's career, right?
That's pretty much it.
He makes other people fail in order for him to do well. Now, in China, they're doing some things right. They are feeding their garbage, their food waste, which is like several tons every day in Jinan, China. And they're feeding it to these cockroach farms. So they're taking it and they have billions and billions of cockroaches that are just eating up to 50 tons of kitchen waste a day.
And what does that accomplish for the cockroaches to eat it?
So it takes the food out of the landfill, right? And so it reduces the waste. But then also, too, cockroaches are very important in Chinese medicine.
So they're actually eating the cockroaches?
They are eating the cockroaches. They do all sorts of stuff with that. They feed it to their livestock, to their animals, because they used to feed like kitchen scraps and stuff to pigs. But then they had the African swine fever had an outbreak. So they decided that, well, that's not a good thing because, you know, humans and pigs are like, we're very similar. We get a lot of the same diseases. And so, you know, a lot of farm-raised pigs are never in contact with human beings at all until the time of their death. Like they might see them, you know, or if they are around humans, those humans are in a full outfit. So there's no contamination whatsoever.
Oh, but, because they're worried about the pigs infecting us through our consumption.
Well, it's more of you infecting that pig. And then that pig is where with all the other pigs. So if you have a cold or a fever and one pig gets it, your entire livestock may all die.
So you could catch a flu by frying up a plate of bacon?
Well, I don't know about that. But, you know, I think from a living pig or something like that, you could do it. But
so kids, don't eat pig tartar.
But, you know, for the Chinese, they do use a lot of stuff. You know, they take the cockroaches, they make beauty masks out of it. They do diet pills, hair loss treatments are some of the things that
they're looking at. What kind of diet pills are you going to take from a cockroach?
You know, one of the cockroach guys who does it, he says the essence of cockroach is good for curing oral and peptic ulcers, skin wounds, and even stomach cancer. You know, it's an animal, and maybe it has properties in it that we just don't know.
It's interesting, like Asian medicine or, you know, non-Western medicine is all about like, well, you know, rhinoceroses are strong, so the horn of the rhinoceros must be good for you. And it's like now these rhinoceroses are almost extinct because, you know, millions of people think that grinding up that horn is good for you.
Well, so maybe it's good that we've turned to cockroaches instead.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, if you want non-traditional medicine, eat... You know, weeds, bugs, go for it.
Well, you had a friend that had some kind of like serious illness. I don't want to say the person's name, but she was using some, she went to Western doctors, nothing was helping. So she went to an Asian doctor of Oriental medicine and they gave her some tea to make. And we looked at the tea and it had all these herbs and stuff like that, but then it would have like bug carcasses.
Cicada shells.
Is that what those were?
That's
I think
what it
those
was.
Had like keratin in there and stuff like that. And it was kind of, we were kind of weirded out by it. But, you know, she got cured, right?
Well, later on, she tried other types of solutions. Mm-hmm. And one of them was just that their fatty acids were really low. So in terms of the, in my knowledge, and of course I have to follow up with her, but her issue was that she was on a very low fat diet. At the time. And she had a lot of stress issues.
Oh, yeah. Because you need fat in your diet.
There's a new study saying that basically if you are over the age of 40 and you can stop the clock of aging of your internal organs by exercising on a regular basis. Just by hitting the gym, lifting weights, even if you're not, you know, looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger or whatever, but just lifting weights and doing a little bit of cardio every single day. You know, on the rest day, you exercise the rest muscle. And every day you are alive, if you exercise just even a little bit, you can stop the aging clock. So they've done these studies of people who exercise every single day. And in their 70s and 80s, they had the internal organs of somebody in their 30s and 40s.
Yeah, I can't recommend it enough to people. And it's just, you know, for me, it's such a way to just relieve stress, you know?
Do you notice that sometimes we have expectations of what a person should look like? And when you don't meet those expectations, they get angry about it.
Mm.
And I notice that when I tell people that I'm like, I'm turning 47 in April, that's my real age. Man, they're like pissed off about it.
Mm.
Like I'm lying to them, or I'm making fun of them, or I'm making like there's all these issues that come up.
Yeah. It's weird when you talk about
it. I don't think I look any special or any good.
Working with somebody, and it was like he was talking about like age or something like that. And I'm just like, well, how old do you think I am? He's like, I don't know, like 43. And I'm just like, oh, well, thank you. But now he's like talking to me about like lip plumping, getting my face fried, like Botox, all sorts of stuff. I'm just like, okay.
But I want to be a beautiful, wrinkly old grandpa, you know?
Well,
I
don't want to be.
You know, there will be the come a day where I have to decide, you know, to embrace looking like a senior citizen.
I want to know, like, because there's a lot of people that talk about, like, oh, they're getting, like, Botox in the age because they're like, it's preventative, so it never happens. I'm like, is that a good thing? I mean, it's like, I don't know.
I am, I noticed that the actress who played the Borg Queen in Star Trek, she was in one of those Hallmark Channel The Christmas Prince and the Christmas Prince Wedding. And I just thought she looked a little bit weird because of all the work that she had done. And she had that Mary Tyler Moore Joker smile where they stretched her cheek back and it made her mouth look like Jack Nicholson in the Batman movie.
With that thing, I don't know if they still do it, but what it is, it's some kind of string that they put in there and then it has little jags in it and then they pull it and so it pulls everything up. Yeah.
And I love Jessica Tandy in Cocoon, you know? That's what seniors should look like in Hollywood films.
Diabetes.
What's the name of that actor? I got the diabetes.
You know, what's his name? Of that when he was in Cocoon?
Yeah.
You know, I'm older than him now than when he made that film. Isn't that crazy? He was an old man in that film.
That's Wilford Brimley. Mm-hmm. He was born in 1934.
And he was like 49 when he made that film, I think.
Really?
Yeah. He was not old. Well, he was old then, I think, but... Because what year did Cocoon come out?
In, let's do the math, 1985, and he was born in 1934. 85 minus 34 is 51.
Okay, so
you're the same age as Wilford Brimley in the movie Cocoon.
Was his wife Jessica Tandy?
No, it was some. It was somebody else,
wasn't it?
It was another comedic actress of the time. But that's pretty funny.
Well, there's a
diabetes.
There's a cash machine outside of the Tate Modern Museum that will, for one day only, on December 11th, it is going to hand out, give you chocolate coins. Maybe.
Yay!
Maybe. Or you might get a lump of coal, depending on whether you've been naughty or nice.
Listen, I don't care what I get for Christmas as long as it's hard and hot.
And so the machine is going to analyze the language you use in your tweets to discover if you are an asshole or a nice guy.
Okay, is there a way to like to you know run your Twitter account on that algorithm to see?
Naughty or nice Twitter account. Let's look.
Boop, beep, boop, 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 beep, boop, boop, boop.
Ho, ho, ho. Feast of Fun is definitely nice. Feast of Fun is on the nice list. 28 out of 100 says, congratulations. You only swore a total number of 15 times in the tweets that we analyzed. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
Watch your mouth, social Santa. Ho, ho, ho. It's sex worker, sex worker, sex worker. Shit, fuck, bitch, anal, asshole, and pussy. Only used this past year, one time, and shit, fuck, and bitch, three times.
Shit, fuck, and bitch. That should be our new band.
Yeah.
Shit, fuck, and bitch.
Shit, fuck, and bitch, anal, asshole, pussy. Woo!
Woo!
Give it up! You want to know what the tweets were?
What?
So the top most controversial, hateful tweets from Feast of Fun, which is mostly me, because Mark doesn't touch it. Anyone who tells Kate Bornstein shit doesn't know what kind of warrior Kate is.
That's right.
Z's refined, not just in... something, that's it.
Okay.
World of Wonder, the best fashion I've seen for a while. I appropriate the shit out of that. Ooh. And Turner Bryant, because Queen's going to stir up shit, although she would be a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what the context of that was.
We'll try not to swear next year so we can get a perfect score.
A perfect score of 100. Mm-hmm. So, wow, they really knocked down your profile, your naughty or nice score.
Mm-hmm.
If I think, you know, it's okay to cuss, but I think what's more important is to speak from your heart,
mm-hmm.
and to listen and communicate well with other people.
And to use the French said, le mot juste, the right word.
I think it's sometimes a badge of honor when I see somebody who has blocked me on Twitter.
Oh, hell yeah. 'Cause
I'm like, I'm not even on Twitter half the time. And if I want to see your stupid tweets, I just sign out and then look at your stupid profile.
You know, it's so dumb. But, you know, sometimes they give you the serenity of a block, and that's important.
Man's rejection is God's protection. A love letter to our haters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for making it abundantly clear what kind of person you are and for removing yourself from my life. I forgive you. Forgiveness is not letting you go of responsibility. It is saying the words, you can no longer hurt me anymore.
That is very
said true. Rudolph to Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. Said, fly your own goddamn reindeer. Did you know, before we leave, that there were two sequels written by Robert L. May to Rudolph?
Well, and you know, they changed the ending a little bit. In the ending, it was just like Santa giving the toys to the kids, but they changed the ending so that the toys from the Land of Misfits, those were the ones he was giving out. So what you see, it's Santa in his sleigh, and then they take the little toys, and he basically just throws them overboard over the sled. Now, he does give them little umbrellas to float.
Parachutes.
No, they're umbrellas.
But umbrellas that function in animation as parachutes.
Okay. All right. But if you have ever jumped off of a roof of a building with a parachute, you know that shit doesn't work. Or with an
umbrella.
Yeah. And so it's nice because they're like, we want a happy ending for these misfit toys.
1954, Rudolph shines again. Rudolph loses his inner light, but finds it one more time through his kindness towards others. Rudolph leaves the village because there's a rift between him and the other reindeer, because Santa is now favoriting Rudolph. Santa can never get it right. Rudolph doubts himself. He loses the glow in his nose and flees the toy shop. In the darkness of night, he stumbles upon some rabbits that need help finding their missing children. After rescuing them, he realizes there's more to Christmas than just a shiny nose.
Oh, that's so sweet. I want to remind folks, we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus. And you get access to all of our wonderful shows, like the one we just did yesterday,
where we answer all your questions.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to just thank you guys so much for being loyal listeners throughout the years. If you have been thinking about becoming a Plus subscriber, now's the time to do it. Or make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Make it generous, and we will send you a box of cookies, honey. Get taste these cookies, mama.
Get these cookies.
If you give me a cookie, I'll give you something nice.
And visit our store at feastoffun.com/store. Get your friend a t-shirt that says, I listen to Feast of Fun.
You know, there's a Triple Xmas, a Pimp Daddy Christmas clause. Mark dressed up as a Santa Claus, sucking on a big stick of rain of peppermint.
It's not too late to order for your ugly Christmas party.
Yeah, at feastoffun.com/store.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you.